Well, good morning to each one of you. So I trust that you're having your souls restored like we are in a weekend like this. Such a blessing to be here. Thank you, Darren, for your willingness to shift. It'll make it just a little bit easier for me to speak more freely with my son not being here with us this morning, even though most of what I would say would go over his head. I do plan to, toward the latter end, share a little bit more specifically how we have adjusted ourselves in life and some of the challenges we face, so it'll make it a little easier. So, by introduction, I just thought I would share this. A month or so ago, I planted a tree in our front lawn, and I'm not much of don't know much about planting trees. And so I did a little research how to do this, because I know they anchor them down so the wind doesn't blow it over, and I discovered the instructions for planting this tree. I forget the kind of tree. It's a pretty little tree. Don't make them too tight, the cables. They have to have some shift when the storms come so that the root system develops properly. Most of you probably already saw the picture of a tree with the root system down below. I saw it this week. It says, sometimes we bloom, I forget the word, where you can see it, and sometimes we grow roots. And so it's in those difficult storms in life where sometimes there's things happening that we don't even realize are happening as it relates to our roots. And I think a lot of us can identify with that, with this subject. And obviously our theme for the week is encouragement in the storms, and I'd like to talk a bit about adjusting our sails. If you have your Bibles and would like to turn to Psalms 107, that is where I'd like to start at, and you can just follow along. I generally use King James, but I chose to read it in NIV this morning because of the subject and a few words that it uses here that I'd like to draw from as we go throughout what we share here this morning. I'd just like to identify the fact that, and I think we would all agree, that some of the difficulties as parents of handicapped children, there are times it takes a pretty serious emotional, spiritual, even a physical draw on our lives sometimes. It just does. And as I say that, I recognize in this room we have children, our handicapped children have very varying needs. They just do. Michelle, a few minutes ago, went out and got her overnight collection from Jared's pockets and brought them to me. Now, this isn't his entire collection. We're only allowed to take small snidbit pieces out of his pockets at night when we take it, in order from his pockets getting too big. And I'm only sharing this to say that we have very varying needs. You could all tell all kinds of interesting stories from your handicapped child, and I recognize this is my point. We have some very varied needs. Our situation, your situations, they vary a lot. So this morning, Jared woke up and he was distraught. He could tell when he goes to bed at night, he empties his pockets and lays them all out around his bed. He knows exactly where they are. And the first thing he does in the morning when he gets dressed is put all those treasures of his back in his pockets. And if we would never take some of his things away, we probably couldn't get his pants up because his pockets would be that bulging fat with his treasures. Last night, my wife, I didn't even know this happened, but she was taking care of some of his things, and he got up this morning, and we had a hard time getting him in the shower because there were some things he couldn't find. My wife just went out and got her collection. I stuck them in my pocket, and my pockets weren't bulging near like his generally are. This is the collection that she took out of his pockets last night, which is pretty typical at night to try to keep things from getting too big. We have a rubber band. Now, my wife put these in her purse when she came in. There's two peanuts here. I don't know if they were yours or Jared's, but there's two peanuts there. There is, I don't know how many of these bags with bugs from his collection. There is one, a glove, and...
I left some there.
Oh, yeah, she didn't take them all. You can't take them all, or we'd really have a problem. But there were several rubber bands. This morning, the issues were the rubber bands. Where are my rubber bands? I think there was three of them. And there's one still here. I think in order to get him in the shower, we had to give one of them back. So we finally were able to get one of them back to him without him spying where the rest of it was, or we would have really had a problem. And so them are some of the interesting things that we face as it relates to the Jared situation. I'll put these back in my pockets for a while, and I can assure you they will get thrown away. Psalms 107, 23 through 32 is what I'd like to read, and then I'd like to draw from this passage as we go along here this morning some, make a few comments. Psalms 23, and if I can just give a little bit of history, as I understand Psalms 23, the writer here is reiterating some of God's people and their failings. They're up and down, and this relates a lot, mostly to the children of Israel. They're up and down journeys through life, and they're turning away from God and turning back to God, and Psalms 107 is reiterating that. And then in the middle of that, the verses that I'm going to read here, I just find interesting in 23 through 32. And it begins by this, and I'm going to read this in NIV. You can follow in your King James if you like. It says, Others went out on the sea in ships. They were merchants on mighty waters. They saw the works of the Lord, his wonders in the deep. For he spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunken men. They were at their wits' end. Then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm. He guided them to their desired haven. Let them give thanks unto the Lord for his unfailing love and for his wonderful deeds for men. Let them exalt him in the assembly of the people and praise him in the council of the elders. One word I'd like to elaborate on here that's in the NIV that's not in King James. I'm not sure how it says it, and that is others. Others went down to the sea in ships. They were merchants on mighty waters. Now, I know that here at Penn Valley, there's a lot of varied weekends for people who are together experiencing interesting journeys in life. I don't know what they all are. I just kind of scanned over it. But this one here is the mentally handicapped retreat. And so I'd like to draw from that concept of others. I did a little bit of research what statistics says of the percentage of children who are born today with mentally handicapped disability. I found it interesting. Statistics would tell us that it's between 2-3% of children born today have a form of a mentally handicapped disability, and it gave acknowledgement to quite a large number of them are fairly mild situations. Now, we may have some fairly mild situations here, I don't know, but I think we would probably agree together that a lot of us that are sitting in this room, God has, I believe, by his sovereign foresight, wisdom, whatever you want to call it, chose us to be part of. If you think about it, we're a very small minority group in our churches. I have no idea how many churches we represent here this morning, but we're a fairly small minority group that God has chosen. And as we see in this scripture, it says others. And you know, there's a lot of symbolic things here that I'm not going to spend a lot of time elaborating on, but these others, and I don't know what all the writer had in mind, I don't know what all the history was that relates to this, but there was a segment of God's people that knew what it was like to sail some pretty stormy seas that God has picked out in this passage of Scripture. They were merchants on mighty waters. You ever feel like you're sailing a ship on some mighty waters sometimes? I think you probably have, to varying degrees. It says, they saw the works of the Lord and his wonderful deeds in the deep. These were people who had a lot of a different perspective of life. You know, it's one thing to stand on ground that's solid and stable. I think probably a lot of us men know what it's like. Maybe you went deep sea fishing or you're on a boat for a greater part of the day and you get back and you're standing on something solid, it feels different. Maybe you're one of those men that got really sick out on the sea one day and you couldn't wait to get back. And now you're standing on something stable. It has a totally different feel. These were people, this minority group is a people who knows what it's like to experience, maybe for days, maybe for weeks, some pretty turbulent waters. It says, for he spoke and stirred up a tempest and lifted high the waves. I'd like to talk in a few minutes a little bit about the sovereignty of God, but if you notice here, it's God that spoke and stirred up the tempest. It's God who orchestrates our details in life. Some of them are pretty painful sometimes. Some of them are pretty difficult. Can we see the hand of God in it? It says, they mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths in their peril. I think King James calls it trouble. Their courage melted away. You know, I don't know what all your journeys consist of. I know there's quite a number of you here that you're here with a fairly young, handicapped child, and you're looking at all of life. I know some of those early days, if I can just give you a little bit of encouragement, I think the older our son gets, the dynamics always change. They always change. There are things that we face today that we didn't face 10 and 20 years ago. But I would have to say overall, maybe it's just us getting used to our journey on the seas. I don't know. But I do know that, especially in those early days, dealing with all the mixed emotion that goes to a handicapped child, there are times we feel, I think most of us would acknowledge, that our courage just kind of about half melts away. And I'd just like to give us some encouragement this morning that unless we can see the hand of our loving Father in heaven, and I want to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, we're going to have a hard time maintaining the courage we need. But sometimes we feel that way. It gives here quite an interesting picture. In verse 27, it says, they reeled and they staggered like drunken men, and they were at their wit's end. Is there anybody identifying with that? Does that ever happen? Maybe not for you. And here again, I recognize there are very varied situations here. There are very varied situations here. It says, then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distresses. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad when it grew calm, and he guided them to their desired haven. Gives a beautiful picture. And I know we don't need to elaborate on this. I know we all know this. And I know it's, but we must refer to it time and time again. The Lord Jesus Christ, the God of heaven, is our anchor. And he is the one that will see us through. He is the one that will guide us one day to our desired haven. And I am very thankful that we have times on this side of eternity. We can experience pieces of that desired haven. I think we can do that. I'd just like to refer to one thing that this small others group sitting here this morning all have in common. One day, I think we all stood at a marriage altar and we made a commitment before God and many witnesses that we're going to be committed to each other and to God throughout life. And one of the commitments that we make is in prosperity and adversity. And I'd like to just think about that a little bit here this morning. I don't know where your mind goes. And the last thing I want to do is somehow label our handicapped children as these incredible, huge adversities. I don't. Sometimes it's prosperity. Sometimes they're an incredible blessing, and sometimes it's adversity. But what I would like to draw our attention to this morning, that it would be interesting to hear your stories. I wonder if any of you stood at the marriage altar that day and made that commitment to each other that had any idea what your life may look like. I don't know if there's any of you that have done that or not. I, in my wildest imagination, would have never guessed that this would be part of our journey experience. But those are the commitments that we make. I'd like to shift now and just consider a bit the sovereignty of God and the hand of God. In fact, I'd like to read, and I'll just read this. You don't necessarily need to turn there. This was God's word to Jeremiah in Jeremiah 1, 5, and 8. And I know this is a different situation, but I think it applies to a degree to us today. He said this to Jeremiah. He said, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you to be a prophet to the nations. Now, I find it interesting. God was telling Jeremiah this, that before you were formed in the womb, I knew you. God set Jeremiah apart for a specific calling. And Jeremiah's response is very similar to our response with the difficulties we face in life. His response was, ah, sovereign Lord, I said, I do not know how to speak. I'm only a child. But the Lord said, do not say, I am only a child. You must go to everyone I send you. Whatever I say, whatever I command you, you must say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them. For I am with you and will rescue you, says the Lord. So here we have a situation where God had a specific call for Jeremiah, for the call that he had for them. And I'd like to tweak that a little bit and think about the call that God has had in our lives. We already, I think, agree that we represent a lot of churches. We're a small segment of God's people with a very interesting, may I just simply say, different journey. We've did a little bit of communicating with some of you the situation with our grandson, Kobe. And Michelle and I were talking about that some and just processing everything of how our children are coping with this and those kind of things. And we were talking about that on the way here Friday. And just thinking about that and not knowing what the future is for Kobe. Is he going to be a handicapped child for life? Is the Lord going to take him to heaven? Is the Lord going to heal him? I believe God already knows that. I believe God all knows those things. But we recognize that God has asked numerous of us to walk difficult journeys in life that many, many times we don't understand. And we choose to embrace them. Anyway, thinking about that, and one of the things I'd like to talk about here this morning is, I don't know how many of you, maybe not many, maybe quite a few of you, I don't know, maybe some of you are in the middle of this right now, feeling like the handicapped child that God has blessed you with is somehow some sort of a judgment from God. I'd be interested in knowing how many of you at times in life wrestled through that, wondering if, what did I do wrong? What type of chastening is this from God? Why all this? I know for myself, I went through that at times. In fact, I don't know how old Jared was. He was a pretty little guy, and a distant relative of ours communicated to us that if we had enough of faith, God would heal Jared. God would heal Jared. In fact, they went as far, there was several years of our lives, we lived in New York City. We were house parents there in York City. That particular couple went as far as saying they believe while we lived there, and they were a bit more of the charismatic nature, but they believe while we lived there, God put a curse on my wife and I, and that's why we have this. And this came at a time where I was sorting through all the dynamics of it. There was a period of life where my wife and I, when I refer to the commitment that we make to each other in marriage, there was a period early in our Christian life where we believed that somehow, with all the needs in the world, and the mission boards looking for missionaries, that we believed God was going to be asking us to fulfill some sort of a calling out there somewhere, as we considered all that. And in our minds, this was the mission that God had for us in life. And we kind of believed that. We supported that. We wondered what God all had for us in life. And we lived there in the city. And then we were in the transition period for a few years, figuring out what life means and where we're going to go in life, what we're going to end up in life. And then we had a handicapped son. And then we have these pressures coming to us that there was a curse placed on us. And then all those crazy emotions that come to our minds, where did I miss it? Where did I not respond to God in obedience? And now God is doing this to chasten us. Now, I believe God does chasten us in loving ways. But I believe Satan loves when he can take those things and twist them somehow and put us on all kinds of guilt trips, why I am experiencing what I am. Now, I think it's right for us to open our hearts to God and recognize if we have erred. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think we have to be careful how far we go down this road. Well, anyway, this particular couple put that kind of pressure on us, and then it was not too much time after that, they had a grandson that was Down syndrome, and they communicated to us, they're just not going to accept it. They believe God is going to heal him, and they're not going to accept it. And looking at it through those lenses, well, the son is still handicapped today. I'd like to look at a few verses in John on that theme. And these verses came to me yesterday. Yesterday, you can turn if you want to John chapter 14, verse 12. But yesterday, when those young people were sharing up here about their experiences, my mind went to a few verses in John, and I'd like to read them, and then I'd like to make a comment about the sovereignty of God and how I choose to look at it. The first one I'd like to look at is John 9, the first three verses, and these are familiar verses to us this morning. Jesus passed by, he saw a blind man which was blind from his birth, and his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, neither has this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. Now, if you turn a few pages back to chapter 14, I think it's 14, yes, and verse 12. Another comment is made by Jesus here that I've often mused over and I've often wondered about this verse. And I know it could have varied meanings, but I'd like to make a practical application as it relates to this, as it relates to us and our handicapped children. Verse 12 says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I shall do, and greater works shall they do, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go to my Father." Imagine this morning, our children are playing outside. Imagine this morning if all of a sudden the doors would burst open in the back. And I may get a little emotional when I give this picture. Our children would come bursting in and say, "There's a man down walking up the lane and dressed in white, and he healed my sibling, and he's made whole, and he's coming this way, and it's Jesus. He's going to be coming in here soon. He wants to touch every one of our children and make them whole." I wonder what kind of response you would have. You know, it gives me the glory bumps to think about that. And I think all of us are looking forward to that desired haven that Psalms 107 talks about. And that day is going to come one day. It is going to come one day. And I can't wait. And I'm sure none of us can wait for that day. But I'd like to make a point here. If Jesus did that, and tomorrow life would go back to usual, we would all take our handicapped children home and they would be made whole. How much faith would you need to face tomorrow? How much faith would you need to fix to meet the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day? How much faith would it take to walk with God like that? And you can just let your mind go that way. But I want to tell you something. Yesterday when these young people were standing up here telling their experiences, and I think there could have been many more young people up here telling those experiences, I want to tell you something. That is a powerful expression of the grace of God. And that is real, genuine faith. I have come to a conclusion with these radical statements that are made. And by the way, I do believe in miracles. And I believe miracles happen today. And I believe Jesus could touch every one of our children and they could make whole. And I'm not going to argue with anyone that that doesn't happen today. I think it probably does. But my persuasion and opinion is it takes more faith to walk with the reality of a handicapped child than it does if it would just go away. And I believe, and it's my persuasion, that it's the will of God that we have these special children. And I believe sometimes it's adversity, and I believe sometimes it's prosperity. But I believe it's the will of God that this minority, a group of people sitting in this room today, can experience the grace of God and that faith that works itself out in beautiful ways. I've come to a resting place in my mind that it takes more faith to walk with God in that way. Not that it doesn't take incredible faith if God was going to touch our children and heal them. I'm not going to go further down that road. I may get myself in trouble if I keep going down that road. But I've come to that resting place. So can we see the sovereignty of God, the sovereign hand of God, as it works itself out in that way? You know, I believe it's part of the goodness of God when we stand at the marriage altar and we make those commitments to each other in the presence of God that we don't know the future. It's part of God's goodness. But you know, the older I get, and I know we all have very different, varied experiences, but I believe that it's all part of God's plan. Here's where I was going with that statement. I don't want to forget it, but I choose to believe. You know, when I thought about my grandson, Kobe, and I thought about the difficult journey that my daughter and my son-in-law are going through right now, and all the unknowns around that, I'd like to think of it, when God wants to send one of his special children to earth, Noah, the last thing I want to portray is that we're some sort of special people here. I really don't believe we are. I don't believe we're this small segment of the 2 or 3% that's anything special. But I do believe when God is looking to bless somebody with some of these hard things that we face, I think God is simply looking for vessels that he can pour his grace, his power, his love, his spirit into so that they can walk out and fulfill the responsibilities that God has. And I believe God is glorified in that. I really do. I think God is glorified in that. And I've had my difficulties, if I can just be honest, in accepting that journey. You know, I want to talk about adjusting our sails here in a few moments, but, you know, I know that early on in our our married life, my wife and I had a vision for homeschooling, and we just believed God was calling us to homeschooling. Not that I believe that's the only way. By the way, there's a lot of value, probably quite a few of you send your children to school. I remember the difficulty when we came face to face with it. How old was Jared when he started going to Hillside? 5 years old. That was an incredible thing for me to work through. I think it was still part of the process of me working through the fact that I have a handicapped child. Most of you probably heard already that they say a cancer patient goes through three stages. First of all, it's denial, then it's anger, then it's acceptance of it. And I think that applies to other areas than just cancer. I know every situation is different as it relates to that too. But I'm just saying this to give encouragement to you younger couples that are dealing with a handicapped situation. Now, our situation was different. We didn't have a Down syndrome diagnosis or some of the diagnosis we had. We just had a child that wasn't functioning very well, and we had no idea what it meant. My wife was having some incredible, incredible sleepless nights where he just cried at night, and working through all the acceptance of that and coming to a place of recognizing that, you know what, this is going to be very different. Our journey with this child is going to be very different. And it actually took me a number of years to come to a place of accepting that journey. I had to adjust my sails and somehow see the good hand of God in that. Enduring faith, storms. We could read, and I'm not going to bother for time's sake to read Matthew 7:24-27, but that's the familiar account of the wise man and the foolish man. But you know, I believe when we respond to God in God's way, our house will stand. If I could just comment about our grandsons. Last 2 weeks ago, we had our three grandsons, Kobe's three brothers, at our house, and we were basically planning a funeral. And one of the hard things was, especially my grandson, Caden, who's six. He's 6 years old. And listening to those children's prayers just tears at your heart when they say, Lord, and don't let Kobe go to heaven. Or don't let Kobe die. Lord, don't let Kobe die. That's their prayer. And Caden, who's the deepest thinker, he says, how can God be good if he allows Kobe to die? Those are some of the difficult things that we wrestle through. And I realize that some of those questions are hard to answer a six-year-old, and it's going to be until he's older and can really grasp a hold of the fact that because people die in the world, it's not God's fault. It's the choice that man made many years ago. Enduring faith. Well, this little saying, my son actually has it in his office at work. He shares it with me different times, and some of you probably heard it already. It says, the pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects the wind to change. The realist adjusts the sails. Thus the title for the message this morning. The pessimist complains about the wind. And I know it's real. There's times when we can be together at a time like this and we have a spirit of we're comrades, we're in this together. And it's good for us to open our heart and share the difficult experiences. But I just appreciate this saying so much. The pessimist complains about the wind. You know how it is, always complaining. And, you know, we need those times where we can talk and be open and honest. Or maybe it's the optimist. He expects the wind to change. Well, it's going to change. It's just going to change. And I know I went through that stage with our son, Jared. It's going to change. My wife is going to be able to homeschool him. He's not going to have to go to a handicapped school. Things will change. The crying, the seizures, and all the unknowns, and all the therapies, and all that we were dealing with. An optimist can say, well, it's going to change. But the realist adjusts the sails. The realist adjusts the sails. Now, I don't know, have any of you ever sailed a sailboat? I never have. A few of them. I never sailed a sailboat. I don't know that I was never on a sailboat that I know of. It's always interesting to me how a sailboat can actually, my understanding is, sail into the wind. And the little bit of research I did, and I'm sure some of you know much more about sailing a sailboat than I do, but I understand there is a technique called tackling, I think, if I'm pronouncing it right, where that sailboat navigates the waters in a zigzag way for the head-on winds. He adjusts the sails so that he can make progress, even though the winds many times blow contrary. And I think most of us can identify that with that in this room here this morning, how at times the winds do blow contrary. And they have a drawing effect on our lives. I'd like to take the remaining time now and talk about some of the ways in life that Michelle and I have adjusted our sails. And I cringe a little bit sharing some of these things because I recognize our experience in this room are very different. And the last thing I want to do is portray to any of you that, well, just adjust the sails like we did and it's all going to work. No. These winds blow contrary in many, many, many unique ways. And I recognize that. And there are ways, as a couple, that we have learned to adjust our sails so that when these winds blow contrary, that we can make it through life. And, you know, I'd have to say that the older I get, yeah, Michelle and I have learned at this age, sometimes we just roll with life and take what life comes. And I think many of you can identify with that. But I think we can actually, I don't like the terminology of just rolling with life. I think there's grace for us to face the challenges in life. And the older I get and look back over some of the difficulties that we experienced in our journey, and one of my father-in-law's favorite comments that he used to make is, God will make a way. When his wife had dementia and he had lung cancer, and he knew he was going to be departing from this world, probably ahead of her, his faith was, well, I believe God will make a way. And it was a very difficult time in life for him. It was a very difficult time in life for us. And many of us here in this room know those difficulties of facing some of these difficult experiences. But the older I get and look back and can start seeing the beauty, how God makes a way. There are many times we need to deny the flesh. We need to deny self. And we need to recognize that we are a small segment of God's people that do have a unique calling in life. And I want to talk a little bit about this, but our lives will be different and will look different. But God is faithful. And I don't ever want us to forget that. One of the things that I'd like to talk about just a little bit is teamwork as a couple. And you know, I recognize when I share this that God has called a few in this room to a very, very difficult life of, because of reasons out of your control, today you're a single parent of a handicapped child. And that is very, very difficult. And I recognize that. And God's grace be with you as you endure that hardship in itself, which is huge. And I recognize that. But I also recognize the need this morning to at least comment on the fact of we're in this as couples together. And it is areas as couples that we need to learn to adjust our sails, and as families, for some of you that are single, to adjust your sails and trust that God will make a way. I wish I had the picture of this. I saw it at a marriage seminar one time, a picture of horses when life is young and you're getting married, maybe you're courting, dating, and you're learning to do life together as a young couple, and it gives a picture of two horses. They're kicking their heels in the air, and they're just out in the pasture, just having a good time. And then 5, 10, 20 years later, it has a picture of these two workhorses together in a harness, and they're pulling a heavy plow behind them, and the dust is flying. And reality, this is what life often looks like. It's just kind of a neat, beautiful picture that I appreciated. And so I'd just like to encourage us together and like to say a few things here possibly relating to that if time provides. One of the things I did this week, and I don't want to comment a whole lot on this because we heard some beautiful testimonies of siblings up here, but before we came out here, I asked my son, my oldest son, what type of effects it had on him having a handicapped brother. And one of the comments he made, and I totally forgot about this, he says, when we chose to discontinue Family Week, it was hard. We traditionally went to SMBI Family Week for years, and Jared came along, and I don't remember what age he was. I'm going to assume he was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, somewhere in that range. And we went to Family Week from the time our children were little growing up, and our children always look forward to Family Week because we're going to Family Week, and that's at SMBI Bible School, which is right along busy Route 30. One of the things with Jared, and even today yet, he has very little to no fear of vehicles. And the time came where we as a family discontinued going to Family Week for fear that Jared would end up on Route 30. That was one of the things that he remembered. And he felt that Jared was always a defining part of who we were. And he gave recognition that there were times, some environments that we circulated in that were harder than others. That was his response to a child that's handicapped. Our son Brent moved to New York State 10 years ago, and in several weeks, they're moving back to Pennsylvania after 10 years. Now, there was a number of other things that happened that are provoking that move, but he feels, as the oldest brother, the need to be part, to be close to his parents because of Jared's needs, which in some ways, for my wife and I, it's difficult to accept that, but recognizing and appreciating the fact that, and my point is this, it's a family thing together. It affects families. and sometimes as families. And it's beautiful when God works in the hearts of children, which we heard a lot about yesterday. One of the comments that my son made, and I'd like to talk a bit about this in the remaining time here, parents must put boundaries in place, others will not. That was my son's comment as he saw my wife and I. Now, my wife and I, we tend to be those that see needs in the world, we see needs in the church, and we can over busy ourselves. And at times it was probably even a frustration to our children. And one of his comments was, and you can take it and process it however you want, as parents of handicapped children, in order to maintain healthy relationships with your children, with your family, with you as a couple, learn to put healthy boundaries in place because others will not. That was my encouragement to my son. I'd just like to talk a little bit. One of the young men said this yesterday and gave the example, and most of you probably heard it, of a plane that's bound for Switzerland, the Swiss Alps, and ends up in Holland, a little bit what it's like to having a handicapped child. And I'd like to just think about that a little bit as we're considering that the adjustments that need to be made because we have and do have a bit of a different experience in life with handicapped children. Yes, we have learned in life to make a lot of varied adjustments so that we can live productive lives and enjoy life as a family. And with Jared, one of the comments that come to me is there are things that we do because we're residents of Holland, not Switzerland. And you know, most of us are going to go back to churches where, if those statistics are accurate, somewhere between 97 and 98% of our people, some of them are going to understand more than others, but there's a lot of people in our churches that simply don't understand what it's like to live in Holland. And one of the lessons I've learned in life, probably still learning, but trying to adjust to, is we just need to be okay with that. Now I want to give something that happened here. This is many years ago, probably 15, 18 years ago. Jared was a little guy. We actually ended up moving from Schenick. We lived in town, and Jared has no fear of vehicles, and he got on the road from time to time. And we ended up looking for a property that was far off the road and ended up moving to Reinhold's, close to Darrell's, and live in a lane that's a quarter of a mile off the road. And we figured now we're far off the road, everything's going to be okay. We don't have to worry anymore about Jared getting lost, getting hit on the road. Well, little did we think of, now we live in the Texter Mountain. And we went through a season of time where Jared simply wandered off. And we had hours where we didn't know where he was. Usually a dog went with him. And when the dog came back, usually Jared came back. With the exception of one time, both dogs came back and Jared did not come back. And that's a whole long story in itself. There was a search party dispatched from Poconos coming down to help look for him. The police were out. Anyway, through a number of course of events, we found him. Here's my point. Over that time, I recognized I need to do something. My wife was totally burning out with the care of Jared and all that related to that. I was at that time delivering produce to to Washington, D.C. I worked for Four Seasons Produce, and New York City I would go to a lot. And at that point in time, I quit what I enjoyed. I bought a truck. My brother encouraged me to start hauling hogs for a local feed mill because it was something I could do and take Jared along. And I did. Wasn't for whatever reason, that's what I started doing. And I still remember sitting in a place where there was quite a few people sitting there, and somebody began talking about, did you hear what Brian Nolt's doing? And there was a lady sitting there, sister in our congregation, who said, yeah, I heard about that. I think he banged his head against the wall. You know, what do you think of when you think of pigs? You know, those are the animals that Jesus cast the demons into, and they went out over the bank. Some people think they're still affected by that today. But anyway, I'll leave that where it is. Who in this side of eternity would want to do that, is what she was saying. He banged his head against the wall. That was painful for me. It was something I had to work through. Now, I didn't lash out. I didn't get upset. One of the young men said yesterday, when somebody stares at their handicapped son, they just stare at him back till they look the other way. Maybe I should have done that. No, I didn't do that. Don't recommend that. But my point is, we live in Holland. And there's beauty in Holland. Isn't there? Maybe some of you feel this weekend's a little bit like Jesus took James and John, I think it was. Who was the other one? Went up to the high mountain, and Moses and Elijah appear, and probably Peter, I'd have to look again, says, let's just build three tabernacles right here. Let's just park right here. And we have these kind of experiences here where it's a blessing and we feel like, let's just do church. Why don't we just let the church out there do what they're doing and we'll just do church here? Because we understand each other, right? Let's just build a few tabernacles. Daryl's tabernacle and pick a few more out. I think you have a tabernacle. We won't go down that road. God calls us to go back to the church. Well, I'm going to be running out of time. Some of the things, yeah, we learned to adjust a lot of sails. I remember one time I was sitting in a meeting and there was a father there of a handicap, of a Down syndrome child. And he just blurts this out. This is a dear brother that I love incredibly. He just blurts this out and says, yeah, these handicapped children, he said, they're just the same as any other child. You just train them the same way. You discipline them the same way. And everything turns out right. Daryl was sitting in that meeting. I remember looking at another man. I think it was you. And I'm like, no, don't work. We didn't say it. But we are residents of somewhere. It's different. It just is. But can we be okay with that? One of the things that I have found, and this isn't necessarily anything with adjusting the sails, but I have it wrote down here and it did come to my mind, was one of my experiences, sometimes we just have to be okay with things being very, very different. Our son Jared is a very social person. Most of you know he's in your face. He loves people, especially people that show him attention. And if he ever meets somebody for one time that he recognizes, he just doesn't forget them, especially if they give him attention. It's not uncommon for me at all to be at a place of business and Jared's like, Dad, you know that man over there? You know that man? Talk to him, Dad, talk to him. He'll grab me and take me to that man or grab that man and bring him to me. And maybe it's one of you. I don't know. Maybe that's already been your experience. But I remember one time I was at Paul B getting some stuff. And of course, I'm busy trying to get through the store and get my stuff. And Jared disappears. And I'm like, oh, boy, he saw somebody he knew. After a while, he came leading a total stranger to me. Dad, talk to him. Talk to him. You know him. I'm terribly sorry. I don't. Yeah, life in Holland. There are times we have wished that he wouldn't look so normal. He was with me making deliveries in the truck the other day, and I backed in at a warehouse to make a delivery, and as I was backing in, there was another truck driver backing in ahead of me, and I could tell he was a little frustrated at me because it looked like I was impatient. I was waiting for him to get in, and he gave this very frustrated look at me in my mirror. I could tell he wasn't real happy with me. Jared's sitting on the passenger seat. Anyway, I back in beside this man who's now sitting in the truck, backed into a dock, and I back right in beside him. And what do you think Jared does? He's sitting in the passenger seat. All the air in the seat, so he's higher than this guy is beside him. If only he didn't look so normal right now. What is this man thinking? But you know, I've learned to get to the place where I care, but I don't care. We're not going to change anything anyway. It's life in Holland. I could tell many other stories. Okay, maybe I should say this one yet. Our children's first date, oh my. Our oldest daughter, her first date, Jared comes running out of the bedroom in his pull-ups. That was all. Nothing else. And we're sitting there like, okay, you can either leave or join us. And anyway, that's Kobe's dad today. Our youngest daughter just began, some of you know him, Quentin Ball, it's a half a year ago maybe, dating. And his first time at church, this is his first time at our church. And he walks in, and of course Jared knew him, you know, he's always running after him, Quentin Ball. Now, most of you, if you notice, Jared almost always has his top button closed. And Jared often tries to close my top button. He just likes, and I'm like, Jared, you can't hardly breathe. You know, no. Rarely he has his top button unclosed. That particular Sunday morning, Jenica's boyfriend is at church for the very first time. And in the middle of everybody, you know, church didn't start yet, but everybody's around fellowshipping. Here's Jared up at Quentin, buttoning the top button. Once again, it's life in Holland. You know, I'd like to say that these handicapped children are a blessing to the church, and I'd just like to encourage us that way. You know, sometimes we feel very needy, and it's okay for other people to serve. Jared has about 3 or 4, maybe 5, 6 men, I don't know what it is, at church that just give him special attention. And it's such a blessing to us. Sometimes it's hard to accept, but here, several times, I shouldn't say several times a year, but probably once a year, there's a man in our congregation, a single man named Mark. He's probably in his 50s. I don't know how old he is. He'll come and pick Jared up and take him 2 hours north to reptile land because Jared likes bugs and snakes and all those critters. He does that. It's just an incredible blessing. You know, I believe that these handicapped children are a blessing to the church. And by the way, I'm certainly not encouraging that we build several tabernacles here. I think it's a blessing when we get together once a year and encourage each other. Our church has 7 handicapped children in it. And I choose to believe that our handicapped children are a blessing to church. It's hard for me to say that because we're the parents of handicapped children. And sometimes people sacrifice their lives for the sake of him and go out of the way to love him. Let's keep in mind it's more blessed to give than receive, and let our congregations be blessed at times to lift our hands because it is needful. And we just really appreciate that. You know, one of the things where I have adjusted my sales is I used to almost always sit up front at church. I just appreciate sitting in the front. You get so much more out of the service, I think, when you sit up front. But I have recently migrated to the back because most of you have noticed here, Jared loves to sing. He loves to sing. And sometimes he's pretty far off key. And I've noticed when I sit in the front, he sits beside me, he has messed the song leader up from time to time. Maybe I wasn't as gracious with your son-in-law as I should have been and sat to the back. But I've learned to migrate to the back because Jared's singing. And sometimes we get kind of sensitive to that. Jared, tone it down. And I try to pat him a little bit, you know, down a little bit. And he's soon back at full throttle. He loves it.
No, but it goes the opposite.
You got it. You understand life in Holland, don't you? Yeah, it just is that way. So yeah, we have learned to shift life in many ways. There's just I don't know what all to say and what all not to say. I know I need to quit here shortly. Maybe I'll share this yet. One of the harder things that I ever did in life was we were part. This goes back quite a number of years now. We were part of a very difficult church situation where I was in church leadership, and it was a brand new church that had just divided off of another church. And we had quite an influx of people from the beginning, and there were some very difficult things we sorted through. We had 2 groups within a church, and we were trying to navigate those waters carefully. We ended up with another brother in ministry that ended up having some difficulties, and we were under overload, and we were in the middle of a very difficult church situation. In the middle of that, we ended up in Hershey Medical Center. Jared had a tumor on his foot. I'm not sure if it was on his toe, where it was at. We were sitting in the hospital, and we had this difficulty. And one of the things with our son Jared is when my wife and I are stressed out and we're facing difficulties in life, it has a wearing effect on him, and he does not do very well with that. And it's one of the difficult things in life I won't ever forget. I remember that very difficult journey sitting in Hershey Medical Center, where I reached out to one of the fellow ministry and said, I will take a break. I knew I was at that pivotal point where I couldn't handle much more. Michelle couldn't handle much more, and it was very difficult, and it was one of the difficult things we did. And there are those times we need to make some of those hard decisions because, and every child is different, but we have those emotional, physical, spiritual draws sometimes on us that's huge. And I think we need to learn to be sensitive to that. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago, again, in a ministry situation in our church, where we as a ministry team were discussing some of the things, and I shared with the brothers that I either need to cut back on something. Something has to change. This isn't going to work. And one of the fellow ministers said, well, he gave me an option. He said, I totally understand. And he, in some ways, was encouraging me to consider another outlet of care for Jared, other than the care that we were currently giving. And he encouraged me to take a couple weeks to think about it and pray about it. And I remember letting him know that that's not an option. I don't need a week or two. He is my first responsibility. And by saying that, the last thing I'd want to do is portray that it's unhealthy for any of you to consider a faith mission home, because I know there are situations much more serious than what Jared's is. And I recognize that. But also, my point is just to encourage us as parents, as we go home, to recognize there are other areas of responsibilities at times that we need to trim because of the call that God has on our life so that we can best fulfill his purpose. My wife and I have learned. I shouldn't say we've learned. We haven't. We are on a journey of continuing to learn to adjust our sails, so that we can be a spiritually and physically and emotionally healthy people, so that we can fulfill our God-given calling and responsibilities. You know, to some of you, a perfect honeymoon getaway is when just you two go off alone and it's just you two. And we do some of that. We do have opportunity at times to do some of that. It's a little more difficult for us because of our married children being scattered in different states, even though that is changing some. But it has been difficult. But my wife and I have learned to have some very wonderful, memorial, sweet anniversary getaways that are very upbuilding with Jared alone. One of them is, if I can just say this yet, my children, my second son used to say, "Dad, you are not old enough for an e-bike. Get over it. You don't need an e-bike. You can still handle a regular bike." I got one for my wife, and I felt if she has one, I should have one. I did get e-bikes. So we have gone on some very sweet anniversary getaways with Jared. He does not have an e-bike. And we do, and he pedals, and he sweats, and he loves it. The sweat's running down, and we just come along behind, enjoying life. I'm not trying to be rude. I don't think we're rude, but I didn't have an e-bike at his age neither. But my point is that we need to learn to adjust life, I believe, for the sake of being healthy. And I would just encourage us to do that as needful. You know, there's just a lot of different things I could talk about that we had done over a family over the years. You know, I would have to say, I talked about in prosperity and adversity. One of the things that I would have to say that God has helped us, far from perfect, but the older I get, as I look back through life, and I think our children would agree with us, in a lot of ways, we've learned to do life together with the hard things. We had a lot of financial hardships in the years when Jared was going to Hillside School. And I recognized in order to get these bills paid, something had to happen. So we as a family were out in our woods cutting firewood and selling firewood. And it was those kind of things that we can do together. If our family can come along and embrace it and we can work together at adjusting those sales. And I believe and encourage us to tap into the grace of God and let God work in our lives. And I believe he does and will have those family efforts where we can adjust our sails together so that we can best fulfill our God-given calling and responsibility. I see I'm over my time, so I will wind down and just encourage you as each of you go home and you journey through life with your unique situation, whatever it is. The winds blow contrary in many different ways, depending on what our current circumstance and situation is. But may we be encouraged that God's grace is and will be sufficient for our journey. So God bless you as you adjust your sails according to God's will to fulfill your calling and responsibility.